Views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
Morning this morning, and welcome back to Guardian Radio 96.9 FM, your station for fresh news, smart talk all day. It is Monday, the 30th of September, 2024, and you are on the clock with Erin Green. And for one moment last week, I thought we had entered the fall season. We had this at the fall equinox, September 21st. We should have been shifting seasons, but it turns out the sun still has a little money on the bill for us, so we get an extra sun. You know, when you're in the government service and you've racked up years and years of vacation time because you're a dutiful civil servant and you don't take any vacation, but then when you say, okay, I could take 7 years of vacation now to end my... you get all the pay. They can pay me out in my vacation years. And then they tell you, no, you're going on vacation for 8.5 years. Well, the sun say, I ain't paying y'all no cash, but you could get this extra sun. And for some reason, the summertime does not want to end. We're going to work on that, even if we have to take a flight up and talk to the sun, because I don't like it. I don't like all this heat. I get old and miserable. It's not like how I used to remember it. It used to be a nice period of heat, and then you could rely on the cool breeze to come. But that ain't happening anymore. So today, I have invited representatives from the Office of the Prime Minister's Climate Change Environmental Advisory Unit to talk with us about a number of things. Now, they have come to discuss a project with us. And after we discuss the details of this project, I'm going to ask them some questions about some things that we have been experiencing over the last few years. We're going to touch on the impact of Hurricane Helene. We're going to talk about the potential impact of Hurricane Isaac and Hurricane Joyce. I'm going to ask about Saharan dust, because I told my Grammy, no, I'm not sweeping my room. This dust is helping keep the hurricanes away, Grammy. Just trust me, we're going to have a safe hurricane season. Also, climate change and heat waves, a sea level rise, a 30-year prediction, and now that I have the experts in the room, somebody said there are two moons in the sky. They swear they see two moons in the sky last night, and they want to know if this is a result of climate change. So we've got lots to talk about this morning. And if you were on the streets of New Providence over the last 2 months, tune into this conversation. Let's find out where all this water is coming from and what can we do about it. Now, just before we get going, I want to acknowledge some of the headlines that we will touch upon tomorrow. Killer driver left dad lying in road. Give client 2 years jail for sex with girl aged 13. It's a long, hot weekend as power goes out. Sans women, not priority for government. And Cooper tells PLPs we can't let FNM back in. Of course, three arrested for human smuggling. We're going to take a look at all of these stories, because they're deeper than just a headline tomorrow. One last housekeeping note before we go. There's a rumor going around, and I think it requires a response at the state level to dispel or quell any myths that may disrupt the environment that the Ministry of Education and Technical and Vocational training is attempting to create, right, the learning environment that they're attempting to create in the country. There's a rumor going around that staff at a local school is charging students $1 a piece a day to use the field at recess. This is a rumor that I've seen stated about 17 times over this weekend, and it's not shared hysterically. Parents and people concerned have taken the time to articulate what they perceive as the issue and their concerns. And I think this requires a response. Have staff at local high schools been empowered to charge students a nominal fee to access resources at the school, like a playing field at recess? Anyway, we throw that on the table for tomorrow. I'm hoping somebody could text, confirm or deny, or please share with the responsible individuals at the Ministry of Education, Technical, Vocational Training. All right. Good morning to my guests from the Office of the Prime Minister's Climate Change Environmental Advisory Unit, commonly known as C2O. I like it. Please introduce yourselves.
Good morning to all the Bahamas. I am Charles Hamilton, a climate change advisor in the Office of the Prime Minister's C2O.
All right. And my name is Rochelle Newbold. I serve as the Special Advisor on Climate Change and Environmental Matters and also as the Director for the unit.
All right, Special Advisor and Director. So tell us briefly, what is C2O?
Well, the Climate Change Environmental Unit was a unit that was established in 2022 when the PLP took office. I say that, and then people automatically try to brand it as a political tool.
Right, but we talk about the Davis administration.
Yeah. Right, yeah. It's not a political tool. It is something that you've seen occurring throughout the globe in various countries. They're taking a foremost and a concentrated effort to focus on the matters related to climate change and how they intend as nations to deal with climate change, right? So we became, Mr. Hamilton and myself, were the two founding staff members of the unit. We've now expanded to more than 10 staff members.
Okay.
And our job is to look at the changing climate environment, global environment, and its impact on financing, economics, and all things sustainable, and to advise the country as to how we need to make the necessary adjustments so as not to be left behind in this global conversation, and also as to be able to be on the cusp of being able to pounce on the opportunities when they become available. Because as a small island country, there are 39 other ones who are always looking with their binoculars for these same opportunities that are being afforded us, and we need to be and have ourselves ready to take advantage of them when they arise. It's not going to be a long, truncated process because we're always in a level of competition.
Okay.
There's nothing about this finance, economics. It's all global now. You're not just dealing with your local Eleuthera, Abaco, New Providence, Grand Bahama fighting amongst each other. No. We have to look at a much broader picture, the global picture, and determine how do we then fit in there to ensure that our people holistically are benefiting from what is being afforded us, or how do we prepare to be resilient against what's coming down the pipe.
So I could say mobilizing these resources in this way, in a special unit in the OPM, say versus a Ministry of Environment and Natural Resources, enables the unit and the staff therein to be able to respond both to opportunities that are laid on a global platform that we need to be able to take advantage of, but also to be able to engage in global conversations at the pace necessary, right? Like at rapidly, so that we could be a part of a conversation where we could say to Ghana, hey Ghana, we see that you're engaged in this major coastal agricultural project, but the research that we're doing in the Bahamas tracking currents and the flow of currents across the Atlantic, mm-hmm. because we're doing hurricane research, right? And these are some of the things we picked up as we're following hurricanes from the western coast of Africa across the Atlantic. We would like to sit down and talk with y'all about some things of note or of interest, of urgency to the Bahamas, because there could be some detrimental effects or there could be a detrimental impact on the Bahamas and low-lying regions in the Caribbean with your project.
Yeah. I think that being able to establish the unit mm-hmm. just allows for a team to be able to nimbly address these issues as they come up. When you get responses from the highest level of government that there's an interest in this climate finance project or in trying to advance climate change and agricultural technical solutions mm-hmm. for the Bahamas, or being able to find ways to be able to insert our voices into global dialogues, you need to be able to move quickly and at a particular pace, and you need to be able to come with a particular authority that comes when you say, I'm speaking from the office of the Prime Minister. And we believe that it has helped to be able to draw in partners and solutions and opportunities for the various ministries and entities on the ground in the Bahamas. So as Ms. Newbold had said, it's something that's being done across the world. People are taking almost like a tripartite arrangement with the Office of the Prime Minister, Ministry of Finance, and Ministry of Environment, because mm-hmm. climate change and the environment and finance are all intertwined, and they're all impacting developmental issues within a country. Mm-hmm. And so, yes, that's exactly why this unit was established and why the work we do is fast-paced. Mm-hmm. But it has great benefits and reward for the people.
Absolutely. Hopefully in the second hour, we could talk a bit about how SIDS are highly vulnerable to the climate crisis. We could look at the environmental impact, the sort of infrastructural impact, and then the developmental slash economic impact, and then, of course, the cultural impact of the climate crisis on small island developing states that are most vulnerable to the climate crisis, and in particular, sea level rise.
Absolutely.
Okay, but you guys are here to introduce a new climate response project to the Commonwealth of the Bahamas. Please tell us about it.
Well, we have the great opportunity of trying to build capacity within our private sector. So there is a project which is called IDB Invest that's being led by IDB, the local office down there on East Bay Street. Everybody passes it, doesn't know exactly what it does, but it does indeed provide a lot of support to the Bahamas in various sectors. So one of the things that they're focusing on is a $500 million project. This project is one that's not exclusive to the Bahamas. It also involves other Caribbean countries. And for instance, this would be, Mr. Hamilton, you want to tell us ones?
Barbados, Belize, the Dominican Republic, Guyana, Jamaica, Suriname, Trinidad and Tobago, and the Bahamas, all in this pot of money to try and advance climate action in our region. So, yes, it's a project that was done in collaboration with the IDB and with the Green Climate Fund. And for mm-hmm. those who aren't aware, the Green Climate Fund is a financial mechanism of the Paris Agreement. And it was designed to ensure that countries are able to get access to climate finance to address mitigation, so reducing greenhouse gas emissions and adapting to the impacts of climate change. We've really been trying to have a more concerted effort to change how swiftly and how nimbly the Green Climate Fund reacts and provides finances to small island developing states. And you have, for example, Mrs. Newbold, who sits as a board member on the Green Climate Fund. And because of the concerted effort that we've been having, sitting at the forefront and saying that you need to move faster, you need to move more nimbly, the IDB proceeded to develop this regional project, about $500 million, to try and catalyze funding to support net zero climate resilient private sector investments in targeted sectors in small island developing states. For the layperson.
Right, because let's say, what does net zero and resilient private sector mean? Let's start with net zero. What does that mean?
So, as we all, and you've heard this said over and over again whenever we start to talk about climate change, that the Bahamas contributes less than 0.0001% of the greenhouse gases that's emitted into the atmosphere. Mm-hmm. Every country has been asked to identify what they are calling a net zero target, a point at which the country is no longer emitting vast amounts of CO2 into the atmosphere and they're at a zero. And that's a zero emissions level. And that comes through the use of technology, a change in industry standards, and talking about engaging in ways and means that take the CO2 out of the atmosphere by, saying, using nature-based solutions and moving that into a zero balance so that the global climate temperatures could start to decrease.
Okay, now, is it possible to bring for a country to bring its emissions down to zero? You know how many of us eat beans? Like, the ginger ale ain't ginger ailing, the beans beaning, right? I don't know how many less beans I could eat to contribute to this vibe.
So if we were only to deal with beans and we kept our vegetation intact, photosynthesis would take care of all of that. Just as a non-starter.
So if I planted the beans but didn't eat them, then the existence of the beans themselves, the plants, would be a part of the process of capturing carbon from CO2 the atmosphere.
Right, because, I mean, we all learned that in biology class. In goes CO2 into the plants, out comes oxygen. Mm-hmm. That's what they're there for. The problem has been that because of the industry tools that we've been using, the methodologies that we've using, the focus on fossil fuel has led it to the point that we have overcompensated for the natural environment's ability to keep up. Because everybody driving a car, everybody wants power and electricity, all this stuff is based on fossil fuel that's pumping it into the atmosphere. And then we're clearing the Amazon, we're clearing our natural islands, we're clearing everything. It's like, if it's a tree, let's cut it down. I don't know what. And so the planet, the equilibrium that was there is being lost, right? So now we're saying, okay, what are the two biggest?
All right, so you're saying not only are we using more technology and more tools and more carbon-producing products, but we're also destroying or removing some of the natural elements on the planet that would have captured that carbon. Yeah. That would have said, I see you in your car, Grammy. Don't watch nothing. I'm going to grab the dilly tree. Say, I'm going to grab some of that carbon and take care of it for you. Mm-hmm. But you've cut down the dilly tree now, and so there's less trees and green matter to absorb the carbon we're producing.
Very much correct.
Okay.
So in the Caribbean, the small island states under this project, their governments are committed to contributing to meeting this global climate change target. The first thing for us as small island states is keeping the temperature under 1.5 degrees.
Yes.
What we have seen now with the IPCC report has indicated is that, I'm sorry, we fail in that course. The temperature is increasing because we are not being very ambitious about how we are seeking to deal with this rising CO2 matter.
Right. And the IPCC is the Intergovernmental Panel on climate change.
Yes.
All right.
So they're the expert scientists who are tracking everybody's CO2 emissions, all the countries of the world. And they're also looking at the mitigation actions, the things that the countries are saying we're going to do to decrease our CO2, and making sure they're the watchdogs. They're checking, making sure the checks and balances are adding up. Mm-hmm. And what they're saying is, hey, after we done do all this work, would we realize it's not adding up? And you guys are still doing a business as usual scenario, and we're heading off that cliff at full speed ahead.
Absolutely. If I could read from this article briefly, from the Nassau Guardian, 28th of November, 2023, UNDP projects Bahamas sea levels will rise 12.09 centimeters by year 2039. I read briefly. For the Bahamas specifically, sea levels are projected to rise 12.09 centimeters by the year 2039, well above the global average of 8.47 centimeters. By the years 2040 to 2059, sea level rise is projected at 25.01 centimeters in the Bahamas, compared to the global average of 18.15 centimeters. So that's almost 7 centimeters more. By the end of the century, 2080 to 2099, sea level rise is anticipated to be 56.17 centimeters for the Bahamas, compared to 40.73 centimeters for the global average. Just rough, I think these rough numbers from last year.
Yeah.
That's a significant amount of rise.
Yeah. I think part of it is, you know, UNDP is looking at the projections, right?
Right.
They're saying, okay, this is what countries are saying they will do to reduce carbon pollution. This is what they're actually doing right now, all right? And if we maintain the same course of action, this is what it's going to mean for melting polar ice caps and therefore contributions to sea level rise. And so this is why it's so important. And I think we will delve into this definitely in the second part, Aaron, because we're seeing where countries are not holding up to their end of the bargain while we're doing our part. And so, you know, we may have to take things to a different level in order to ensure that action can be done. But yes, I will not sit here and, you know, tell Bahamians that these are not sobering figures to look at. But this is also why it's important and why this unit has been set up to see how we can capture as much funding and opportunities for us to become more resilient and to develop solutions and strategies that would help our country in the face of a changing climate.
Yeah, I wanted people to understand the urgency.
And that is why it's also important for us to, as a people, to galvanize our resources, the innovativeness, our intuitiveness. But sometimes we tend to rely a lot on the government, what the government can do. The government isn't the country. The people are the country. The country belongs to the people. And if we as a people want to see an enhanced livelihood, we also need to do our part, right? So now we're this $500 million potential. We're saying to the private sector, this is only for you. The government cannot take advantage of this $500 million.
The funding, right. Okay.
Only the private sector can be the one to take part of it. And by taking part of it, they will need to then be focused on things that would help enhance the livelihood of all Bahamians, meaning that their projects have to be focused on things that will help us be better to enhance our livelihood as people. The sea level rise issue. Some people might say seven centimeters, man, that ain't nothing. But what we got to understand is we are a coastal state. We already at sea level for number one. Number two, our freshwater lands is within 12 inches of the topsoil. So anything that pushes up the sea water pushes it impedes our freshwater resources. It gets in there and fresh water will float over salt water. That means our freshwater lens is now becoming exposed to topsoil contamination. And then now we got a place where our people always had water to drink. Now we can't drink the water because the water contaminated for one reason or another, right? Improper environmental activities that are going on in and around it, or even just the normal exposure of it being now the lens is exposed to the sea. And so osmosis, I mean, listen, biology class, chemistry class, you can't miss it because it's coming back to help you.
Absolutely.
And you will see the salt water trying to get into the freshwater lens to try to dilute that freshwater, because, you know, we can't dilute the sea, but they're trying to mix to come to a level of equilibrium. So projects that are utilized in that way, projects that are dealing with transportation, projects that are dealing with agriculture, projects that are dealing with energy opportunities, projects that are dealing with waste, even projects that are dealing with forestry and land use. These are the type of private sector projects that we're looking for.
New construction techniques?
New construction techniques, of course. Anything that aids us to live in harmony with nature and as a sustainable portion to it, meaning that it doesn't impact the environment but enhances the environment. Those are the type of projects that we have. And one thing I wanted to add here too is a lot of times when you talk about opportunities, capacity building for entrepreneurs and stuff like that, people always say, yeah, but every time I have an idea, somebody else gets it or someone steals it. Well, see, now we cut out the middleman, right? The government ain't in this, right? Mm-hmm. So, because this is the persons who usually get blamed for this, right? We're telling you, bring your project, take it to the international capital investors. You boom. And if your project isn't as well developed as it can be to be put on the international market, to be shopped around so you could marry a partner to you, there is also a technical component to help you truly fit all the pieces together and identify where your gaps are so to make your project stronger. As Mr. Hamilton said, we are not the only ones in this part. There are other Caribbean countries that are in this part. And we know that the Bahamas and the people of the Bahamas are just as engineering and entrepreneurial as all of them. And we also have ideas about solutions that can take place that will not only benefit us, but it will benefit them as well. So we're asking the private sector to please make yourself known and put yourself out there so that we can see how we can advance that and start to draw some of those funding opportunities here in country.
All right, so let's talk about criteria for participation and then let's get closer to some more specific ideas that have already been engaged throughout the region or already on the table, people are discussing, and then potentially ideas best suited for the Bahamas, the archipelago, the limestone environment. So what types of businesses, well, I see, I'm sorry, caller, that I missed you. We're going to take calls in the second hour, but feel free to send questions via text now to 422-GR96. That's 422-4796. The text line, as always, powered by BTC. And then for our phone lines, 323-6232, 325-4316, 325-4259, and 242-300-5720 is toll-free specifically for Family Island residents. I want you to definitely join the conversation. So what types of businesses can participate? The criteria, are we identifying sizes of businesses that can participate, types of businesses that can participate? Can for-purpose NGOs and civil society members participate? So for purpose is that we do raise funds, but the funds are intended to be reinvested in the organization's work.
Mm-hmm. Based on the project, it has outlined that entities that could be a corporation, or okay, it could be a project developer that is working in the area of agriculture, forestry, using land sustainably, sustainable and resilient infrastructure development, energy, sustainable transport, the blue economy, which you can come back to that, right? Mm-hmm. Water and waste. It could be a special purpose vehicle. It could be a financial intermediary. It's trying to keep things as broad as possible,
okay,
to ensure that as many efforts that are coming, that are privately driven, can have access to this funding.
Okay.
Right? And as you know as well, I stated sectors that are so broad, right?
Mm-hmm.
Again, because these were seen as broad areas that have been seen as interest in countries' national climate plans. So it's helping the country to achieve its climate action plans, but also helping these entities to grow and expand their services and products.
All right. So, but like, so when I hear special purpose vehicle, I'm thinking an architectural firm, a transportation company, and a project manager or urban planner may form a special company because we're going to develop a community. And the aim is to include elements in the community that help, say, water management and waste. So the roads are actually going to be narrower because we're going to have gullies on the side to capture water and drive them to a particular storage point. which means that all the members of this community will use golf carts or smaller motorized vehicles within the community. And we have like an elevated parking lot with solar chargers outside the community. So when you come in, you park your road vehicle, mm-hmm. and you transition to a golf cart or an electric bike to traverse the rest of the community.
Okay, it sounds like Aaron already pitching.
The businesses can come together to form another entity engage the process.
It is greatly encouraged, mm-hmm. extremely encouraged, mm-hmm. that there is a conglomerate of individuals coming together to generate a project idea.
Okay.
Because this isn't a nickel and dime kind of offering.
Yeah.
This is big, chunky financial options. You do not want to put forward projects where they will be going through a very rigorous evaluation and review process for $100,000 when we're talking about $500 million.
Right.
Those projects may end up getting put down to, oh, we'll deal with that later. Let's look at this big $300,000 or whatever, $300 million project here.
That scopes across three territories in the region.
Or our multiple islands. And whatever we're proposing must be replicable. That means whatever we do, if you are funded here and it's successful, then these other countries should be able to repeat that based on the fact that you're not doing anything that's endemic to the Bahamas or unique, that no one else, this is a proprietary sort of thing that no one else can do this other than you, mm-hmm. right? So it's about the Caribbean being able to be, to sustain a livelihood level for all its people in the region. Because that 1.5, once we overtop that, not only is the Bahamas gone, but all of our Caribbean neighbors are gone too, because all of us are the same, we're dealing with the same level of issues, right?
Yeah.
When the hurricane comes, we just, barrel went sideways, right? So, and she topped everybody as she went. If she had taken a northerly turn, she would have taken all of us out, right? Mm-hmm. And this is one of the concerns that we have, that there may be a time when you have a hurricane that does just that, and we won't be able to lend each other a hand because all of us will be in the same part.
Right, we've all been hit by the same storm.
Right. So under this project, there, the only criteria is you cannot be government. That's the only criteria. You cannot
now,
be government.
I got a specific question specific to the program. Politically exposed people. Just, and so in terms, when I come in to sit down to speak more specifically about the project, mm-hmm. you determine whether politically exposed people can be involved. That's all. Just a technical thing.
So I think for us, Aaron, we wanted to be able to have this conversation to let people know about this project. Mm-hmm. And we're planning to invite the IDB on with us so that we can get into some of the
more
technical specifics.
No problem.
Right?
No problem.
But that's a great question.
Yeah, because I may be politically exposed. I can find out, right? Some of these raccoons, I don't know what second job they have, but they'd be working hard. Yeah. All right, so larger projects, right? Mm-hmm. Because here I am thinking, in South Asia, they taught monkeys how to pick
fruit.
Mm-hmm. And a small group, and then within a month's time, through observation, they realized that monkeys throughout that whole jurisdiction, that whole region, were now picking fruit in the same way. I could teach raccoons to pick up garbage. Right? Like, we could do something like that. And so instead of them eating all the fruit, mm-hmm. they have a more positive contribution, right? But we're thinking far grander than that. Okay, we discussed some of the ideas that are applicable and also would work well in the Bahamas. So what types of support? Mm-hmm. Is it just access to the money? Will I be assigned a mentor, a team? Is there a process? Will there be training that I'll be required to participate in, whatever entity it is that that engages the program?
Well, the project is going to span 5 years.
Okay.
Right? So under that 5 years, there are going to be some levels of capacity building, some support, technical support that is lent to the particular projects that are going to be selected. The thing that we wanted to say was the fact that the project is hands-off government, solely engaged in private sector. That private sector engagement will be with the IDB. So the IDB will be offering technical support to whomever the Bahamian public puts forward, and that project is selected to be part of the funding mechanism. And that built-out time of 5 years. Now, mind you, projects could have less than 5 years in order to be selected, right? Okay. But this is the long-term phase, because like I said, all those other countries are involved. This is the long-term phase of the project. The project would have been approved from March of 2024, so we got to tell 2029 to get everything done and all the expenses put out.
All right. Absolutely. So we got to go to a break. When we get back from the break, it's got a ton of text. I want to get to the text right away. Some great questions. When we get back from the break, I want you to tell us right away, who do we contact? Says, who can one contact? Let us know. People are rolling with ideas as we speak. Guys, please stay tuned to Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. We're talking to the OPM's Climate Change Environmental Unit. We'll be right back. Stay tuned.
The Grand Bahama News is available every Tuesday in the Nassau Guardian. You can buy your local paper at Freeport Convenience Stores, Western Bakery, DeGregory's Fine Foods, and Bellevue Gifts. Now is the time to reach your Grand Bahama market with affordable packages, including print and digital. Call GB News Sales Representative Kavondre at 822-6717 or message him on WhatsApp for ad rates. Classified ads are now available every Tuesday as well. Keep up with everything Grand Bahamian every Tuesday in the Nassau Guardian.
When you jump in your Japanese import and you turn the radio on, all you hear is... For the month of September, the HitSpot will install a band extender in your Japanese import for the discounted rate of only $79.99, VAT included. Get your band expander installed today at the HitSpot and listen to...
Star 106.5.
Plus, get fresh news and smart talk on...
Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas.
For fast, reliable, and impactful printing services, look no further. Let Printmasters bring your masterpiece to life. We stand by our quality products that is second to none. Our affordable pricing and friendly, efficient staff makes Printmasters the ultimate choice for all your printing needs. We can deliver any type of printing services, from banners to booklets to business cards. You name it, we can print it.
Let Printmasters bring your masterpiece to life.
Located in the Nassau Guardian Building, telephone 302-2361.
Love the show? Want to give your support? Become a sponsor today. Call 302-2300 for our rates and packages. That's 302-2300. Become a sponsor on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
Good morning and welcome back to On the Clock with Erin Green. We have representatives from the OPM's Climate Change Environmental Unit in with us. Caller, I'm coming to you in a second, but let us get the contact information out right now. How do we contact the advisory unit?
So as it relates to this project, right, the first thing we want to let everybody know that it is being run through the IDB country office, and the number for that office is 396-7800. Now, as a government entity whose interest is to ensure that its people are engaged in a manner in which an agreement is states out, we are also wanting to make sure that we're making those connections, right? So we would tell persons, well, if you reached out to the IDB, please email us at cceau@bahamas.gov.bs, and our phone number is 702-5500. So that way we can ensure that everybody who we're thinking should be involved in this discussion is actually being involved, and we can compare notes with the IDB. And I also want to point out that this is only the first in what we hope to be a series of interaction, because we were not able to get our IDB partner here for this call, for this program, but we definitely will be coming back again, and therefore with them in play, we'll be able to have a much more comprehensive and answering some of the questions that you've pointed out before.
Absolutely. Okay, let's go to the phone line. Good morning, caller.
Good Good morning, Aaron. All is well?
Yes, sir. How are you?
And good morning to your guest. I don't think they realize that they're being set up right now with this conversation with the Abbott being in the office of the Prime Minister. But in any event, I just want to know if they have to air up the Prime Minister as he's going around the world proclaiming climate, this and climate that, but we have yet to institute any real institutions in the Bahamas to that effect. I would like to know how would you respond to that statement and if there are anything going on to correct these issues. Because we going around, our head is still going around talking about these issues, but we are not correcting our own issues in the Bahamas.
All right, so
sit and listen.
Look, if I could attempt to reframe the question, thank you very much, caller. Outside of the establishment of the Climate Change Environmental Advisory Unit, has the government implemented or established any other entities or agencies to work with and collaborate with the unit? Is there any space where we can see the expansion or the policy projection for this space so we can identify entities on stream? And is a what appears to be a lack of fervent action on the ground an indicator that nothing is happening, right? Or is the Prime Minister doing his part by trying to create an environment where people see the obligation to earmark and invest or divert funds to the Caribbean climate change movement?
So when you started this conversation, I was very clear. I said, I know a lot of people are going to say, well, we ain't doing nothing, or when I come up with an idea, someone steals it. So here is one option, one example of what we're doing. We're saying, we hear you, private sector. So what we're going to do, we're going to give you your own space. And not only are we going to give you a space, we're going to ensure that you have financing that's able to help you address what you say is so important and how you want to contribute to the needs of the people. So under this IDB program, you won't have to come through the government. You could go directly to the IDB, pitch your projects, get your financing, go ahead and do your implementation, so long as it is something that definitely addresses the issues that we have identified in the climate space as things that we know we need to deal with. Secondly, yes, the Prime Minister has gone out there and he is keeping the Bahamas, its needs, and that of the Caribbean and the other six nations in the global spotlight. If we do not have a champion that is out there pleading our cause, calling our partners to account, putting their feet to the fire about things that they're supposed to do, we will be summarily dismissed. They will go ahead and focus on their own problems, and they will forget about the commitments that they have made to us. And that would put us in a very, very difficult spot. All the Caribbean countries and all the six nations of the world, there needs to be some time. We do not have the resiliency like developed countries, like Florida now with Helena. These people have the options of going to Montana. They could go to the Dakotas. They can move if they so wish and they don't want to go back to Florida.
With greater ease than the Bahamian could migrate
out of
any island that they're on or the country as a whole.
Exactly. And then even for our SIDS countries in the Pacific, they are buying land. Not buying. They're leasing land in Australia because they now have to move from their point of cultural and historical location and prepare to go to someplace else. If we don't keep our pressure on that gas pedal, they will not. They will drive away without us being in the bus, and they'll be saying that they're doing their part for the global climate issue.
Absolutely.
And I'd say, just so that people are aware, there's a lot that's been done in our country. The country has committed to reducing its carbon emissions by 30% by the year 2030. You would have saw the government rolled out this ambitious new energy era, looking at, one, how do we reduce the transmission loss of electricity? How do we have and create these microgrids and hybrid grids and solar panel farms? We've you would have seen the duties reduced or eliminated on, you know, the solar panel kits and the parts. You would have seen the duties reduced on the electric cars and on hybrid vehicles. You've seen the explosion in the amount of companies that are trying to develop climate solutions, whether that is, you know, carbon absorbing concrete, thinking about these are different farms that are using different techniques. So work is being done here on the ground, and some of that is happening because the Prime Minister is out there advocating and people are seeing us as a place to invest in.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So I've got three callers. I'm going to try to squeeze them in before the 11 o'clock hour because I need to talk about the two moons. I've been tolerating all this high-level conversation. It's interesting. Mm-hmm. I want to know, is climate change responsible for these two moons? Good morning, caller. Good morning, caller. You still there? Sorry, we missed you. Good morning, caller.
Hello, good morning, Ms. Green.
Morning, sir.
Yeah, question to your guest. You know, the question, the last caller hinted on something. You know, I guess they realize, you know, when you burn the coal from the wood, you also get carbon dioxide, right?
Mm-hmm.
I don't see them doing anything about it here versus certain people, the certain demographics taking and burning down the forest. Also, we breathe all carbon dioxide. And as she's talking about chemistry, right? But methane is pound for pound 30 times more potent than CO2. And so what I'm saying is, I'm not a climate denier, because these narratives are false. I know that there's climate change, but I know for sure that it's not because of CO2. These people have no data on nothing here in the Bahamas versus carbon offset. When you do the research, I'm not worried about the IPCC, the International Panel for Climate Change. I'm talking about the real, when you go into the real debt, you'll find out that in order to achieve net zero, right, it will cost about trillion on a global scale to introduce the infrastructure needed. So yeah, I was talking about funding, right? But you have to realize the challenge lies in detecting the difference of the isotopes between the anthropogenic carbon versus the carboniferous carbon. And so net zero, you have to achieve, all right, would you fly in an all-electric plane, Aaron? So you have to have data on everything in order to achieve net zero. All of these estimations, everything is just grossly exaggerated. And I'm tired of people using their knowledge and euphemism and gaslighting the whole world as it relates to this climate change. And I don't know if it's in her prerogative, you know, to bring someone in to talk about this death for nature swap in the fact that they're saying they're trading carbon. The PM is all over the world talking about the grassland in the seabed, et cetera, and the amount of carbon that it can offset. Superiority.
52, so, hold on, one second.
Where can we go from that? It's all a farce.
But okay, 52.
So, the climate is changing, but you're not mentioning God and orbital deviances and other scenarios. You're just talking about climate change, and CO2 is the source of all life.
Okay, 52. I want to ask you a question.
You guys have to come and have real intellectual, deductive conversations about these things, man.
52.
This doesn't look right, because I know climate is changing. Can you please read the Cambrian period in the next session? On the CNA, we just Google the Cambrian period.
Okay, but 52, I wanted to ask you a question. I wanted you to repeat the distinction between the two types of carbon, right? Anthropogenic and the other type of carbon. So then I could ask you if you would be willing to work on a project, right, to devise a methodology that could be applicable across this region and potentially globally. So not just low sea level, but mountain region, right? Where a layman like myself, a more learned layman like yourself, or technical experts could do that research and determine in real time the types of carbon that are being produced, the types of carbon that are being sequestered, and the potential to work in there to increase the sequestering of one type versus the other, to identify the impact of one type versus the other. Because perhaps what you're saying is correct. But like, what if what you're saying is correct and they need someone to take advantage of the funding available to further expand and develop new protocols to approach? Like, I just read an article, I think you may have shared it with me, 52, about how scientists have created new technology to better understand the way that water molecules organize themselves on the surface of the water. Right? Like, maybe this is your opportunity to expand the very space that you critique in. And I think that's a good thing, 52, but I don't like how you didn't pause to let me ask you the question. Let's go to the next caller quickly. Oh, Ms. Newbold?
Yeah, I wanted to respond to what he said. There is no doubt. Nobody is trying to gaslight the public. Mm-hmm. Methane is more highly a greenhouse gas than CO2. The issue, however, is under the agreement, the global agreement with the Paris Agreement, all the countries agreed to focus on the reduction of CO2. And because the issue was everybody was using hydrocarbon fuels. And hydrocarbon fuels in the chemistry breaks down to CO2 and water. And we all agree that because even from the 1960s, we saw that this emissions of CO2 just from the use of hydrocarbons was going to have an impact on our global temperatures. Mm-hmm. And so we all said, okay, let's all get together. Let's reduce this. Let's change the technology that we're using from combustion engines or anything that uses fossil fuels to something else. We do not have a global agreement on methane. We are trying to deal with that. But methane is so nefarious. It's in so many things. The agricultural products that we use emit methane. The animals that you were talking about, the people pooping, the cow pooping, they want to track that methane. The Bahamas can't take on a methane tracking document because we can barely do with the transportation and the energy and getting those two under control. Now we're going to try to restrict our farmers when we are already in a position that we're importing so much of our foods, we're going to cut off our nose to spite our faces. No, let's deal with one thing at a time. Let's do one thing right so that we can learn from that and then do the second thing right. That is our position. And that's what we're asking the world. If the world would just decrease its CO2 emissions, we will see a drop in global temperatures. And when we start to see that global temperature dropping and the new technology being in place, and everybody acknowledges that the airline industry will be probably one of the last things that we look at because they're not technologically capable of putting something in play that would replace the use of carbon fuels. But even the fuel that the airline uses is much better, much cleaner than the ones that we say put in the buses or the cars.
Why we can't put it in the... Anyway, we at the end of this 10 o'clock hour, I was about to ask you why I can't put that inside my car. I mean, I know why some of y'all can't put it inside your car. You're already trying to fly and your car is not helicopter enabled. That's a good reason why. Thank you for that explanation, right? Just before we go, what we're doing is we're taking advantage of a global protocol that already exists, mm-hmm. one that people are already acculturated to, one in which we have a greater chance of shifting culture, shifting behavior. Mm-hmm. There you go.